Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Any Given Game Day with Mike Carlson. I'm joined by the 3-0. It's me, Kieran O'Connor. It's John Balf, and it's Mike Carlson. What do you get that, gents? That's an intro, isn't it?
That was a great intro, Kieran. It's, well done. You're getting better at this. It's only taken 7 seasons of the podcast.
Well, this is a new show, so all the others are wiped away, you know. Nobody remembers any of them. True. Before I say anything, what I would like to just start the show with by saying, if you are enjoying the show, it would be really great if you subscribe, like, subscribe. If you're really enjoying it, like, surprise, subscribe, and give us a review kind of thing. It'll push us up everywhere on the charts, which will help our show. I noticed lots of podcasts start by doing that, and I've kind of been a poor podcast host by not doing it. So please, look, if you're listening, just take out the phone, hit subscribe, and it will really help us out and it'll keep the show going. So that would be great.
Yeah. Exactly.
Is this like your moment for confessions and apologies?
Yes, although I don't have anything to confess, nor do I have anything to apologize for, but I will open up the floor to you both if you do feel you need to.
That's okay. I thought you were going to go on about, you know, before I say anything, having already said, you know, a minute's worth of saying.
I get what you mean. Yeah. Well, look, we don't have any ads at the pod at the moment. I listened to a couple of podcasts. I listened to one today, and there was 6 minutes of ads before anyone came on to talk about anything. So there was like 3 minutes of like welcoming ads, and then the host came on, and he just like, here's my Patreon, and here's stuff that I have on Amazon, and here's where you can get signed. And I was like, my God, when does the goddamn show start?
it's always an early warning sign that what's coming up is going to be boring because they want to get everything in while you're still listening.
So look, we are week seven. We're heading into week eight, right,
guys? Week eight. Yeah.
Week eight. We're heading into week eight. Yeah, seven in the tank. I just wanted to touch really briefly on something, which is the Super Bowl market. Polymarket, which some of you will know, is kind of the Betfair exchange of the United States. Really popular with crypto boys and stuff like that, where they ply all their money into it. And comes out clean. I'm not saying it was dirty going in, but it's clean coming out. Anyway, the Kansas City Chiefs, they rank things on a kind of percentages. At the moment, they put the Kansas City Chiefs as a 16% chance of winning the Super Bowl, 12% for Buffalo, 9% for Detroit, Eagles 9%, Green Bay 7%, Colts 6%, Rams 6%, Tampa Bay 5%, Baltimore 5%, interesting, San Francisco 4%. Thought it'd be funny to have a look at the outright odds. We lose Paddy Power for this week. So based on that, it's quite similar, to be honest. Kansas City Chiefs 5-1 for the Super Bowl, Bills 13-2, Lions 13-2, Packers 7s, Eagles 17-2, 10s bar, Rams, Colts, Broncos, 49ers, all in around between 10 and 22-1.
We not have any, where are the Patriots in all of that? Or are they listed?
They are 33-1 to win the Super Bowl at the moment. So I could go on and find out what's the biggest price for them if you'd like. But yeah, John, you start. Sure, what do you think of those prices?
Well, I think they're interesting. But the one thing, and I'm not sure if I caught this correctly, but are Baltimore more favored to win the Super Bowl than New England are?
Yes. What? Baltimore 20-1. New England are 33-1 to win the Super Bowl.
That's, I mean, I would take a little bit of issue with that. Not that I'm really going to, you know, be predicting a New England Patriots Super Bowl win here, but the reality is they're 5-2. They're 4-0 away from home. And they're looking like the signs of a decent team. They're obviously top of the AFC East now as well, ahead of Buffalo. Like, you probably imagine Buffalo will streak ahead at some point in that and take that division. But at the same time, the Patriots are very much looking like a playoff team, and the Ravens are very much not looking like a playoff team at the moment. And I mean, last time I checked, you have to sort of make the playoffs in order to win the Super Bowl in the first place. So, I mean, I think it's kind of, I think maybe this is just the Cleveland Browns fan in me talking right now. The Browns have a better record than Baltimore, I also hasten to add, in the AFC North. And I'm not picking them to even get out of the division or make a Super Bowl run, very, very obviously. But I don't know. I think the Patriots, they deserve a little bit more respect, a little bit more love than they're getting for the 5-2 starts of the year so far.
But not that much. You know, right now, I look at the Patriots as being a lot like, and I know you want to talk about them later on, but I look at them as being a lot like the Mac Jones Patriots in his first year when McDaniels was still there as offensive coordinator. And they went to the playoffs kind of like New York did with Daniel Jones on the kind of 9-7, but they beat who they should be, and they couldn't beat the teams that were good. And luckily for them this year, they do face still a fairly soft schedule. You know, those teams that were, everyone said, well, look at their schedule. Not many of those teams have improved greatly between last year and this year, whereas Baltimore will once they get Lamar back, which could be soon, will be still facing a fairly tough run in. I find it interesting that Kansas City's short odds, you know, but it, everyone has faith in Andy turning the team around with Rashee Weiss back last week. It sure looked like the offense was turned around and the defense hadn't been playing bad anyway. I think Spags had some really good games. So, yeah, I'm not arguing with it too much. I think both Detroit and Philadelphia are a little bit underrated by that by those odds. I would give both of them a better chance than Buffalo, for example.
Yeah, I think this is the year. It's the first year in a while. What are we now? Like, we are like week eight. We're, you know, approaching the midpoint of the season now. And I'd imagine, like in previous years, I seem to recall that we have a pretty good idea at this point of the season, or, you know, you can make a good educated guess as to how the season is going to progress from this point. But I think it is quite unusual that it is this season seems to be, there's not really a standout, like, oh, put, you know, hang your hat on that team, they're going all the way this year. So perhaps with that in mind, this could be the year for, you know, maybe taking a slightly longer bet than you might do, you know, looking at some of those longer odds, they might actually pay off going on how the season has progressed so far. So I think there's a little bit of wiggle room there for some courageous bettors.
Who's got the best record in the league?
Indy?
Yeah. I didn't hear their name called. They're already 6-1. The thing is,
11s, you know, or 12s, kind of.
Yeah, proving your point, John. Indy's got one loss. The Packers have a loss and a tie. Pittsburgh's 4-2. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 8 teams are 5-2. So that's 11 of the 32 teams have either one or two losses. And really, at this stage of the season, you wouldn't expect a third of the league to, you know, to be playing ahead of everybody else.
Yeah, well, it also brings up those some of those teams with losing records. And you mentioned the Patriots and their run. Well, so obviously the Patriots played at the weekend. At the time, the Titans were 1-5. Next up for them is Browns, 1-5. Then the Jets, 0-6. Then the Bengals, 2-4. Then the Ravens, 1-5. Then the Jets, 0-6. The Dolphins, 1-5. So yeah, it's a slow boat race to the playoffs for them with some of those teams. Obviously, people would get Ravens should improve. Bengals should improve. I mean, they played the Jets twice, God bless them. Like, that's like,
yeah, with the Ravens, specifically a one win team, 1-5 team. Like, there is, I fully take Mike's point about Lamar, you know, on his way back and whatnot, but there is very, very little margin for error now with, you know, having lost 5 of your 6 games. Agreed. So you really have to, you've got to hit the ground running. There's no time to sort of, for Lamar to adjust or Lamar to, you know, have a couple of games to warm up. He's got to go in there and he's got to play lights out football. The type of football, you know, like the MVP caliber Lamar Jackson, he's got to go in there and take games at the scruff of the neck and drag that team over the line.
Yeah.
I should mention those figures were from last week, sorry. Before they played the Titans, well, there will be a game missing in them.
Who's the unluckiest guy in the NFL this week?
Unluckiest guy?
Mike is McDaniel's it Jude? Real, Mike McDaniel's estate agent. He can't get that house on the market yet.
Yeah, he'll find a frat house somewhere in his next town, so he'll be fine.
One last piece. There's actually quite a rare occurrence in the NFC where there are 6 5-win teams, but a 4-win team holds the number one seed, as Mike mentioned there with the tie. So Green Bay are the number one seed with 4-1-1, but San Francisco, Philly, Tampa Bay, Detroit, Seattle, and the Rams all are 5-2. So you don't see that every day.
Plus, maybe good news for the Bills. They've got their two guys back. The two drug cheats are back after their 6-game suspension. And they'll help your defense a lot because run defense has been a problem.
Okay. Who are we talking about there?
Barry Ogunjobi and Michael Hyde. He pronounces it. Right. Who they signed from the Rams, and he immediately, like a week later, he was suspended for 6 weeks.
What did he do on the flight?
And
an anxious flyer, is he?
It's great. I was looking at it. I'm sitting here reading it to myself. You know. Dalton Kincaid has an oblique. Terrell Bernard has an ankle. Milano has a pec. Daquan Jones has a. Can't even read it. Curtis Samuel has a neck and ribs. Hairston, the rookie corner, looked really good. Tyler Bass, the kicker. Cam Johnson, the punter. They're all out. DeMar Hamlin's out with a pec. It is an impressive. It's like World War One. You know, there's the Buffalo Regiment.
I think some of those
Buffalo Cavalry.
Some of them are coming back, aren't they? I have Keon Coleman on my fantasy team, and he still won't throw to him with all of those. He's like no one else in the field, and he's still like, I'm not going to throw to you.
Just not bothered. Yeah. But that's the thing, though, about those early week injury reports. I kind of think that some of those are legitimate, and some of the other ones, particularly maybe the more veteran players, it's the sort of like the what's wrong with you? I'm kind of not arsed training, or perhaps I've got a few aches and pains from the games. So I'm just going to sit this one out, and they're going to say, "What's wrong with you? Knee. Let's go with knee."
Yeah, that reminds me of the Florida State game because Coleman played at Florida State in Dublin, and the two guys who were arguably kind of like doing the best from that Florida State team that got beat by Georgia Tech, or the one guy, the Georgia Tech guy is the tight end, Hayes, who went to Yale and then after he graduated transferred to Georgia Tech for 1 year. And he's played really well as a big tight end. But Fitzpatrick, the kicker. And I remember watching him in pregame, and he was banging him in from 60. And then they had two kickers, and they used one on the shorter kicks, and then he brought him in just for the big one. He kicked the winning field goal, and he's been great so far this season.
Well, there's an open space for an Irish kicker in the NFL these days.
Well, we'll get to that.
Yeah.
Well done. We're going to do the Broncos great game. Great pickup for the segue.
But let's start with Vikings Chargers. It's Thursday Night Football. The Minnesota Vikings are 6-4. The LA Chargers are 8-15. The handicap is 3.5. The total points is 44.5. Thursday Night Football. John, I'll go to you with the first. Sorry, I just hit the mic with my fist. I'm so strong. Talks with his fist.
Don't hit the mic.
3.5 as a spread for this slightly surprised me. I think it's kind to the Chargers.
Why do you think it's kind to the Chargers?
Because they are a kind of a Jekyll and Hyde team, and we saw the worst of them over the last few weeks. And I think that there's a lot of question marks about exactly what, especially offensively, what they have. So I would prefer to see that at 3 or 2.5.
It opened to 2.5, strangely enough.
Yeah, I think that's a fair reflection. I'm surprised. Obviously, that means there's been a hammering on one side. But no, I'd be slightly concerned about backing the Chargers 3.5.
I do see your point there, Kieran. I think we talked about it last week, if I remember correctly, that the Chargers at the moment are just facing just a raft of injuries across several of the most important positions in football, basically. The running back is two starting running backs are down. They're kind of just reduced to fielding like Vidal and these other guys, Hassan Haskins as well, basically just a guy, as that kind of as those types of players are known. And Hampton is a big loss. And like the wide receiver core is down as well. Obviously, the offensive line is in a bit of trouble as well. But they did come on the wrong side of a pretty hefty result last weekend. Last Sunday, they lost 38-24 at home now to the Colts. And obviously, we spoke briefly about the Colts here and the season that they're having, the 6-1 start. No other team has won 6 games in the league so far this season. But if you actually break this game down, Chargers. Like the game script, like Herbert threw for 420 yards. Now, a lot of that is kind of you're chasing a game so that the game script can kind of dictate that sort of thing. But they lost this game in the second quarter. The scoreline in the second quarter of this game was 17-0 in favor of the Colts. And then all the other quarters were quite tight. 6-3 in the first, 15-14 in the third, and the Chargers won 7-0 in the fourth quarter as well. So that suggests to me that they're a team that can gut it out and they can hang in there. And if they were playing a team that wasn't in the momentum or the type of form that the Colts have last week, I think they probably could have come out of that with a nice nifty result to stand against the injury problems that they're having. they're down, as I mentioned here, they're down both tackles. That leaves Justin Herbert very, very vulnerable to blitzes. And we saw that a bit last week. And I think we'll kind of continue to see that, particularly missing Joe Alt, who's up there with the best tackles in the league. But Herbert, he's a consistent, he's a good quarterback in this league. The offense is playing sort of middle of the road, really, 15th in EPA per play. They're kind of middle tier across the board in a lot of those statistics. And same with the defense, they're kind of middle tier, which suggests that they're maybe not going to go too deep into the season. But, you know, I think this is another challenging game for them as well. Minnesota haven't had it all their own way so far yet either this season. They've done a lot of traveling, as we know. They played two games in this part of the world. But I think now that they're back, they've got those things done. I think that this is looking like a Vikings win, I would say. I can't really see any other way out of this. But then again, if the Chargers hang in there, hang tough, and pull out a result by a few points, I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah, I mean, the problem of last week was that Herbert had to throw 55 times.
Yeah.
And, you know, that becomes, with most, even a good quarterback like Herbert, it becomes a real problem because there's nothing else for the defense to worry about. And the other big question here is does Carson Wentz play, which he's played fairly well, but you always get one or two, you know, brain shattering, knuckle dropping, bad mistakes by him in any given game. And be interesting, because if J.J. McCarthy was playing, he'd be going up against his college coach, Jim Harbaugh.
I think that'd be a big surprise. Didn't they say at the press conference that he expects Wentz to play this week?
Yeah, so I think he will.
When is their bye is the question. Like,
that's a good question.
Normally they would have had it coming off the international break, but they don't anymore. So the 9th, 25th, Sunday, then the Friday, Sunday. God, I don't know when it is.
yeah, I was looking at it and thinking about the short. Their bye was supposed to be after the London game, yeah. October 11th was their bye. Are they coming off the bye? No,
they're not coming off a bye, no.
They played last week, yeah. I wonder when
they 11th, yeah. So they had the 5th of October and then they played the 19th. So after the Browns game in London, they had a bye. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that's going down the crapper. But sorry. But, you know, I agree with John on most of what he said. But I think at home, this feels to me like a Chargers game. Harbaugh kind of sweeps things around and makes them play more deliberately. And but I'm still not convinced. I agree with both of you guys in different ways. The 3.5 makes Minnesota a bit more attractive to me. And I think the over is the bet I would actually take first in this one.
Okay. We like a high scoring game.
I think the over-under is only 44.5. So that's like a 27-20 game or something like that. That doesn't sound unreasonable to me.
Okay. Just a note, of course, daylight savings time clicks into play here on Saturday night, but does not in the United States, which means the games are a little bit earlier on Sunday. So at 5 o'clock, the first game that we're going to look at is the 49ers at Houston. San Francisco 49ers are 10-11. Houston, Texas are 5-6. The handicap is, it's just 1.5. And the over-under is 41.5. You got to feel that 41.5, Mike, is kind of a, in terms of total points, there's two things happening there. It's kind of like San Francisco not being involved in many high-scoring games and Houston's inability at times to get the job done. But definitely San Fran are a team that if you were back in the over with, it's not going as well as you would hope sometimes. I point to Sunday at the Falcons when you would have assumed it would have gone over.
Yeah, I thought it was within reach because Atlanta, but San Francisco's defense was playing lights out. You know, considering that they didn't have Fred Warner, they've had other injuries. Nick Bosa's not there. I thought they did a great job of confusing Michael Penix and covering really well. And what was it? 56 yards rushing. They just completely stopped Houston's. Not Houston's running game.
Atlanta.
Atlanta's running game, you know, like what was it, 40 yards that Bijan Robinson had?
This is after Balfe said that he would take him over Jonathan Taylor, who decided to take that very personally and score three touchdowns on him.
Yeah.
And defeated me in fantasy football. Thanks, Kieran.
Yeah, and Christian McCaffrey had 129 yards rushing and 72 yards receiving.
McCaffrey's quietly having a really good season. I know, like, because he's this explosive player, and then he was injured. But actually, in a kind of a non-headline stealing way, McCaffrey's having a very, very solid season for 49ers.
Yeah, and I loved his touchdown where he was pulled into the end zone by a rookie, seventh round rookie guard, while McGlinchey had a guy in a death grip. So you could have had two penalties on that if the referees had been awake, but they were busy. In the Houston game against Seattle, there was a total of 22 penalties for 198 yards. It was like, who do you buy your ticket at $400 to go see? You know, the guys in the zebra suits or the players? But I thought Houston was... I thought Houston was very disappointing. Stroud, who looked so calm and mature his rookie season, still, yeah, I don't think has got back to that kind of poise in the pocket. So I would take San Francisco, who I think are a lot like Seattle in many ways, and you've got a three-way tie in that division with three teams at 5-2, none of whom are really great teams, although the Rams keep playing. Yeah, actually, you know what? I think those may be two of the like four or five best coach teams in the league. Now that Sal is back coaching the defense in San Francisco and McVay is coaching. Remember, McVay could have had a draw if he didn't go for the win in overtime. So they would be 5-1-1 as a result. So anyway, just going down to the wrap, I like San Francisco in this one. I don't think the point matters much at all. And I think the 42-5 is tight for an under. I'd probably avoid the under because I could see this game coming in at something like 21-18, 21-20 even.
Too close. Can get that. Johnny B, talk to me.
Yeah, well, the one thing I'll say about the under, is it 41-5? Is that what the over-under is?
Yep.
Yeah. So the
41-5, I'd say leave it alone.
Yeah.
Well, I had it at 42 is where it opened.
Yeah, yeah. The thing I'll say about, well, the reason I suspect that that number is sort of that low is, partly because of perhaps Houston struggling ever so slightly in offense, even though I fully take your point, Mike, about CJ Stroud, certainly compared to his rookie year, but maybe there's a little bit of signs of life, certainly post-bye for them this season. Looks like it's getting a little bit better. But the thing that is kind of most interesting, I think, about the Texans is that no team is conceding less points in the NFL this year than the Houston Texans. And until I read that today, I hadn't quite taken that on board. They're allowing a league low 12.2 points per game so far this season, which is very, very impressive. And when a team does that and their offense isn't necessarily, you know, playing lights out football, that'll mean that the under will always be in play, regardless, you know, as long as it's within the realms of possibility. But yeah, I think in this one, I think it's maybe a little bit too hot for me, so I'll be staying away from that personally myself. I do think, though, I'm like I said, going back to my previous point, I do see a little bit of a resurgence from Houston. They're a team that I think has promised so much. I think last season, a lot of people were, you know, they were a dark horse Super Bowl team for some people. And by some people, I mean me, because they were my dark horse for the Super Bowl. And that clearly didn't pan out too well. But against this 49ers team, like, Christian McCaffrey is the danger man, very, very obviously. He's playing incredibly well. I think his receiving stats are up there with some of the top receivers in the league, and he's a running back. He's a pass catching back, so it's a different thing entirely, I suppose. But I think With the 49ers, I think they're just a middle of the road team so far this year. Mac Jones is kind of doing a decent Brock Purdy impression playing behind that offensive line, but I still think they're a little bit overvalued relative to their current form. So I don't know about the 1.5, and I don't know about the over-under in this one. If I'm doing anything with this game, it'll be taking the Texans as part of an accumulator, just as on a money line situation, and hoping for to pair it with something else.
They scored, what, 19 last week? And if they hold the 49ers to 12, you're in like
flame
with the but
still be pretty tight. It's tight though, and that would obviously rely on a lot of things going, going in your favor for that to happen.
San Francisco so far is 3-1 this year on the road against the spread. So that, like I said, that the 1 or 1.5 doesn't really bother me. But if I was doing a prop bet on a player prop, I'd look for Kittle to have a reasonably good. He didn't do much last week.
He didn't touch the ball last week.
That's right. But I think this week you'd look for Kittle to be the surprise. We forgot about him. We're concentrating on McCaffrey. I think Juszczyk is now a thing of the past. I think he's kind of hit the wall watching him play all through the game.
If they're looking for some more kind of trick or kind of gadget type plays, it's maybe Kittle is the guy to jump back in there. He said in the post game press conference last week, when he was asked about his 0 yards, 0 catches game, that he profusely apologized to his fantasy coaches. And somebody asked him, like, well, what was the story? Why didn't she get the ball? And it seemed like kind of a, he said, ask Shanahan. And it didn't seem like he was saying that as sort of with a wry smile. I think he was actually a little bit aggrieved at the situation.
Yeah, I mean, what's going to happen to his podcast if he doesn't have catches? he's supposed to be the next Travis Kelce.
A couple of games taking place at 8:25 and kind of 8:01-ish. We got to talk Denver, I suppose, for a variety of reasons. Dallas Cowboys head to the Denver Broncos. The Cowboys are 11-8. The Broncos are 4-7. The handicap is 3.5 total points, 50.5, because Dallas score a lot. But I suppose, John, on this side of the water, the Broncos result, caused an Irish kicker to get cut yesterday. Unsurprising, missing 3 extra points in a game. First time I think that's happened. Not first time 3 extra points, but in a loss and really a crucial loss. I think if he'd kicked the last one to put Denver up
4, they would have had to go for a touchdown, not a field goal.
I think he probably would have gotten away with it. What do you think?
Yeah, they would have won.
Okay.
Yeah, it would have changed.
Would he have been cut?
What was on? I don't actually remember. What was on the
clock? Oh, would he have been cut? Point? He probably wouldn't have, I think. The extra point would have put them up by 4.
Mm. That's right.
Sometimes, though, it can, the life of the kickers have a very, very short sell-by date in the NFL. If you don't, prove yourself actively within a few weeks, generally speaking, at a new team, particularly if you're a rookie or an undrafted guy, it's the standards are just incredibly, incredibly hard to achieve. And you did see it actually, just going back to the Browns earlier in the season. If you remember in game one, they've got a rookie in there, Schmidt, the kicker. And it was the very same situation to McCatamne, the Giants kicker, in that he missed both a field goal and an extra point, either of which they lost by, a couple of points to the Bengals in week one. Basically, they should have won if they nailed those kicks. And by the way, the kicks were extra point is obviously very, very close, but the field goal he missed was also within kind of extra point range. So the narrative coming out of the Browns beat reporters was like, surely this guy's going to get sacked and we'll find there'll be another kicker floating about somewhere that we'll get. But for whatever reason, the Browns stuck with him. And ever since then, he's actually been really, really good. So I don't know how you factor in the yips, how you factor in, just a bad day at the office. Obviously, they will see things in the training ground that we're not privy to on the TV screen. So they can, that can obviously influence the decision as well. But just from what we do see.
One correction.
Go ahead, Mike.
It's on the points, isn't it? Because I'm looking at it.
If he made the last extra point, it would have put him up by 3. So
3, yeah.
Into overtime. But remember what happened to my man, Daniel Carlson. He played two games for the Vikings and they cut him his rookie season. And then he went to Oakland and he's been really good since he got to Oakland.
Yeah, exactly.
Just on that game, one touchdown in the first, one touchdown in the second quarter, one touchdown in the third. Then the fourth quarter, we get a touchdown in the 14:08 minutes, a two-point conversion, a touchdown at 10 minutes, touchdown at 5 minutes, two-point conversion, a touchdown at 3 minutes, 51, a touchdown at 1 minute, 51, a touchdown with 37 seconds left, and a field goal with no time left on the clock. The over-under on that game was 42.5 points. There were 46 points scored in the fourth quarter alone. So if you're ever feeling like your over hat bet might be done, you never know.
You would have got better odds if you'd bet a 42.5 fourth quarter over under.
Yeah.
My God, yeah. How do we see this one going, Mike? I just want to touch something you said off when we were getting ready for the show. You said to me, people tire at Denver.
Yeah, people forget about that. You know, that Mile High, the air is thin, and the Broncos have a great home field advantage because they're used to it. And they don't like start panting in the fourth quarter, but lots of other teams do. And Baltimore to me seems like the kind of team that might well do that because they're big guys. They're based on a kind of a team based for power. Yeah. The only other place that's got a similar advantage is Miami when it's hot and humid. You know, and teams come down in December from Buffalo or New England or places like that. And they sweat it out. By the fourth quarter, they're kind of tired. But the thing with the Broncos is I think that was a factor against the Giants. But the other factor is the sacks. They lead the league in sacks by a big margin. Mm-hmm. And that takes a lot out of a quarterback. He's constantly looking. And then when you're down into the real pressure time in the fourth quarter and your linemen are starting to, you know, you can hear them hard breathing when you're in the huddle and you can see the Broncos, like, you know, like Broncos kind of chomping at the bit, waiting to come at you. I think that had an effect too on the Giants and on Jackson Dart, because it's really one bad throw, one bad decision, as much as a bad throw that handed that one to. And of course, they're not going to cut Jackson Dart because he's doing really well. So in this one, I think it's a real test, a real Mile High test in that sense for the Cowboys, because they've got to show Dak Prescott's having a really good year. They've had a couple of impressive wins, but they have to show that they can stand up against pressure. Remember, a couple of weeks ago, they stood up against pretty good pressure with a line that had one starter starting at his normal position and three guys who hadn't started before playing in the line. So, I think that's the most interesting matchup of the game. More than anything else. And I think they might have seen enough about Bo Nix to figure out a way they could slow him down a lot, just like the Giants did in the first three quarters of that game. So I think that Denver's a little more vulnerable than you might think in this. And I think if they fall behind against Dallas, they may have a really tough time catching up, because I think Dallas will play offense through the game, even if the Mile High factor is in play. It's a 3-point game. If you're in a 3-point game, Dallas has the best kicker in the game. So factor that into your thinking as well.
Yeah, we were commenting on how smooth he kicks the ball. Before we started the show, he just looks smooth. Like from 60 yards, it's like a golf swing more than they all kick into the ball. You know, he just seems to be like, oh, over the bar, see you lads, I'll go back to my chair. John, how do you see this one go? Dallas playing, Dallas are fun to watch. They're kind of a bit like Patriots in that they seem to score a lot. Dallas seems to score a lot, but can't seem to defend.
Yeah, that's, you know, they're defense is inconsistent, and like I think a lot of people are pointing to the idea that they're missing Micah Parsons, but that was, you know, they made that decision themselves. No one forced that to happen.
Micah who?
Yeah. But just on the Cowboys Broncos game, the point I was making there is that the defense is inconsistent, but I think it retains like an element of opportunism that can sometimes, you know, be in their favor. But when you're talking about the Cowboys, nobody's going to be looking at them and defining them by their defense. It's the other side of the ball where they make their most impact, obviously. And I think this is interesting because it's Denver who, like we said, have, you know, obviously last week was last week. The Giants game was just a bizarre thing. Obviously, you can't count on that happening over and over and over again. But this is the first time in a while, at least anyway, in my view, that they're playing against what can be considered an elite scoring team. And I think that's what this Dak Prescott-led offense is at the moment, with CeeDee Lamb and Pickens playing very well, and Ferguson, the tight end, being a very, very consistent receiver for them as well. So, and as well, Devontae Williams. So I think when an offense now, the offense has a quarterback playing well, two good receivers, a good tight end, and a good running back, that is, you know, obviously there's other factors in there. You need an offensive line in there doing as well, but their offensive line isn't terrible either. That can, you know, that can really, really flourish. And I think that is the key to this game, because while the Broncos are on a 3-0 streak, that comes against poor offensive metrics at the same time as well. Like, we're talking about that Giants game. We talked about, obviously the focal point is the fourth quarter and just the sheer chaos of that. But they were scoreless through three quarters of that game, which is also tells its own story. Prior to that, they scored 13 points against the Jets. That tells a story as well. So I think the danger coming to this game is that people can perhaps look at the fourth quarter of that Giants game a little bit too narrow-mindedly without taking in the evidence from the prior like seven quarters of football that they also played. Again, 13 points versus Jets and no points at all in three quarters versus the Giants. So if they keep those things up, they'll struggle to maintain this Dallas team, who can really, really put a lid on their offense. So I think, yeah, Cowboys are where I'm looking at this so far, and Broncos -3.5 I think is the spread in this one. I wouldn't be confident in that at all.
Are we having 3.5 now?
What do you think
about the over under? Because I'm sorely tempted to go under on this one.
50.5 Do you mean in just one quarter or in the whole game?
I think it's based more on the high-powered offense of Dallas. Yeah.
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 The last one we'll touch on for us is Packers Pittsburgh Steelers game. Green Bay Packers are 4-7. Pittsburgh Steelers are 11-8. Handicap is 3 on the dot. Six is a push and play there at the moment on Paddy's. 45.5 is the over under. The Packers. Yeah, they looked all right. I'm still not sold. I'm not buying everything about Green Bay Packers this year. And maybe I'm not really buying everything about the Pittsburgh Steelers this year. But I do think Rodgers has them playing a kind of a game that can definitely get them to the playoffs. Packers, I'm not sold on them. I'm not sold on Jordan Love, I think, Mike, sometimes. Just not quite.
A lot of people aren't sold on Jordan Love, nor on the young, exciting, but not necessarily top league consistent Green Bay Packers receiving core. But this is the Ayahuasca Bowl. And what's the one team in the NFL that Aaron Rodgers has never beaten? Unless Packers, you want to be really cynical and say that, you know, he beat the Packers when he was quarterbacking the Packers any number of times. But yeah, the Packers are the only team in the NFL he hasn't beaten. I'm more impressed with the idea of Pittsburgh's defense on Sunday night in prime time playing really well. And I think Jeff Hafley's done a really good job there. And that gives the game a slightly different dimension, because all the focus is now on the rush from TJ Watt and from Highsmith and the other Steeler pass rushers, but it's also on Green Bay's defense. And I'm not sure about the offense in Pittsburgh. You know, that, as you said, Rodgers is playing a different sort of game, and I think that's the Tomlin influence. They're trying to keep him a bit more controlled, a bit more don't take that many risks. He's taken some, but he's hit on a lot. His arm is still almost as good as ever. I think it might lack a little zip, but no one throws the long ball as well as he does, you know, and places it in. So I think Pittsburgh at home with three is more the way. Is it three or three and a half now?
Three, still three, yeah.
Yeah, is more the way to go. And I think if you want overs, their 45.5 is here is pretty tempting. Obviously, it's been bet up from 44.5, so other people were thinking that too.
Send us home, John.
Yeah, I think I would agree with most of what Mike said there as well. I think the Pittsburgh Steelers are a difficult team to sort of judge this year, because while, what are they, 4-2? They're winning some games. Obviously, they won the game in Dublin. We saw that one live, Kieran, you and I. But then they go and lose to like a really inefficient Bengals team and make Joe Flacco look like, you know, an MVP candidate, which he probably isn't. But who knows what's going to happen this season, because it's a bit wild. So I think, yeah, perhaps the Aaron Rodgers revenge angle in this game is a little bit overstated, even if I am kind of curious to see this, him going up against Jordan Love, who, if many of our listeners will remember that Aaron Rodgers was, how should we say this? He was mildly peeved when the Packers drafted Jordan Love in the first round a few years ago. He didn't take it terribly well. And it ended up sort of facilitating his move to the New York Jets, which has now ignited a burning hatred in his heart for the New York Jets, as many other people in the league seem to have as well. But we are digressing here once more. In this one, I just have a feeling that this, I think the balance is thumbed a little bit more in the favor of the Green Bay Packers this game, or this time around. They're just a little bit, they've nudged ahead of the Steelers in several of the kind of the metrics that I kind of keep an eye on when I'm putting together my notes. They're sixth in DVOA, fourth in EPA per play, all sorts of things like that as well. Jordan Love is averaging 8.3 yards per passing attempt, which is very, very good. I think in the league you'll see a variation from like 6 point something up towards this, so that's a significantly above average yards per attempt from Jordan Love there as well. And also defense is playing pretty well too, as Mike mentioned. Micah Parsons has made a big difference there and will continue to, in my opinion, make a bigger difference as he gets more bedded into the roster and into the scheme and how the defense plays football there. So I think, to sum it up, I think the Green Bay Packers are kind of steady, efficient, and have achieved sort of a playoff level consistency this season. I have no doubt they'll make it to the postseason. With the Steelers, they're, I still think it's a strangely weak AFC North this year. I think they have a very, very good chance of topping it, even if, as we mentioned at the top of the show, some of the odds seem to suggest that the 1-5 Ravens are the favorites to come out of that division, which I still am a bit dubious about. But, you know, for all the talk about the Steelers and how they play ball and how they're harnessing Rodgers and how Tomlin is so experienced playing with kind of veteran quarterbacks in this, it's being solid, if unspectacular, I would say, this Steelers team this year as well. They're certainly capable of winning some games, but that Bengals defeat and just the sheer manner in which Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Flacco just destroyed them really, really gave me pause for thought. So I'm not as high on the Steelers as I previously was, and I think the Packers, like I said, are just a steady, efficient team, and efficient teams can beat, you know, teams who are up and down, hot and cold, quite easily. So I think I'm going Packers in this one.
Okay.
One last question for you guys. How do you like the idea of taking the biggest odds of the week, which was the spread for Tennessee at Indy is 14.5. You know, I hate backdoor covers, but I don't even see Tennessee backdoor covering 14.5. And the second biggest is Washington plus 10 at Kansas City. And if Jaden Daniels were playing, I might consider Washington to backdoor cover. But with Marcus Mariota, I can't really see it. John's Cleveland Browns are 7-point dogs in New England. And the over-under there is 40.5. You going under, John?
Not this time. That's a good 17, that, to me, speaking of segues, this leads into the best bet scenario. So shall we jump into that?
Yeah, to deliberately sell. So last week we had another clean sweep.
We're all doing Kieran very well this year, aren't we?
Yeah, Kieran had Carolina over the Jets. Giving him 1.5. It was 13-6. Last ninth inning home run by one of the Carolina Panthers. But Bryce Young is out this week, so be careful with with Carolina this week, because they're playing, Buffalo's coming to town, and Carolina, I think it's up to seven and a half now that they're getting. John had Cincinnati and Miami going under 39.7. It went up to 37 points, but stopped there. So John was up as well. And I had Seattle giving 3 to Houston. It was a 8-point game, 27-19. So at the end of 7 weeks, John Balfe has 5 wins and 2 losses. Kieran O'Connor has 5 wins and 2 losses. And I've got 5 wins and 2 losses, much like the NFL itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of 5 and 2s here, huh?
Mike, you go first.
Ooh, pass.
John, you go first.
Okay. I am going to go to the Browns-Patriots game in this one as well. I just find the Browns to be, you know, you can kind of set your watch by them. And I don't mean that in because they're offensively fantastic. I think you just kind of know exactly what you're going to get when you watch Browns game these days. And it's not the over-under I'm looking at in this time around, which is 40.5. I'm actually picking the Browns to finish it within 7 points. The spread is 7 in this one. Obviously, the Browns are the dogs going into it, but I just think you can. The Browns are the Browns, really. What you see is what you get. Very, very good defense, excellent pass rush, and a very, very inconsistent offense with a quarterback who's just seems to be playing with. This is Dylan Gabriel now. He's still playing with the stabilizers on, really. He's not really allowed to throw for more than 10 or 15 yards at a time, which is fine, really. If it seems to keep them in games a little bit longer. So if they can slow down the Patriots' offensive rhythm, the Patriots, obviously, I'm aware of the fact that we were talking about at the top of the show as being a potential, you know, or was bigging up their chances to get to the playoffs. I think they probably will get to the playoffs, and they probably will win this game, but I don't think they'll win it by more than 7.
Okay, I'm going back to the well. I'll take the Bengals minus 6.5 against the hapless Jets.
I had figured that one out just before. I thought you were going to come to me. I said pass. No, you're welcome to do it. I'm creative enough to be able to dig up some other avenue. What's the spread at New Orleans, Tampa gone from 4. It's bumped around a bit. Where does it stand now?
Currently, it stands at
4.5. I'll take Tampa giving 4.5 to New Orleans.
Perfect. And that is it for us, ladies and gentlemen. Again, thank you so much for listening. A reminder, if you are listening and enjoying the show, please do subscribe to the show. Give us now a like, leave us a comment. Anything like that will help us along in this early stages of our brand new show. But other than that, thank you so much for listening. Thank you, John, for joining us. Wonderful to
of
have
course.
You.
Of course.
And Mike, good. Hope you're doing
thank
well.
Thank you.
Yeah. That's it for another episode of Any Given Game Day with Mike Carson. We will speak to you again next week. Bye for now.